This is case number 10, SC-325, McKendry versus the people. Both parties ready? Argument is for half hour, and just as a reminder, please state your name when you start the argument. And you'll have to keep track of your time.
May it please the court, my name is Dana Menzel, registration number 34008. I am here representing Charles McKendry. The civil process is due a person who is accused of a crime in the state of Colorado. The rules and statutes and constitution and interpreting case law in the state of Colorado requires that a person who remains in custody on a felony accusation is due a preliminary hearing with respect to probable cause on those accusations. The rule further states that if someone is out of custody on a felony allegation, that person also, in the event that it is a mandatory sentencing crime or a crime of violence, is also due a preliminary hearing, or if those charges alleged in the complaint are a felony 1, 2, or 3. The scope of a preliminary hearing is laid out in both the rules, the statutes, and the case law. It is clear in People v. Fisher that each and every element of the crime alleged in the complaint is subject to probable cause determination by the court at a preliminary hearing. The method at which the proof is provided to the court, as the Court of Appeals states in this case, is different than that at a trial. The standard of proof is not beyond a reasonable doubt. The rules of evidence are relaxed. Hearsay is admissible. However, the fact remains that each and every element that is charged and alleged in the complaint against the defendant must be proven a probable cause.
But an enhancer is not an element, is it?
Well, I disagree. I believe that, at least with the case law, starting with Apprendi, Blakely, Ring, it has been clear that there is no distinction between what Colorado has sometimes deemed sentence enhancers and elements. Now, the Court of Appeals has made a distinction in this case, saying, well, that's only for purposes of trial. I think that what is important in this case is that the purpose of a preliminary hearing exists, and it's important, and it's similar to those of a purpose of a jury trial.
That's an argument that I'm not sure I understood you were making in your briefs. I mean, it seemed to me you were saying an enhancer is an element for all purposes, so it has to be treated as an element as far as the statute is concerned. But now you're saying there's a constitutional aspect of your argument. What is that precisely?
The constitutional right to a preliminary hearing?
Yes.
I think that
is, I mean, that's what you're maintaining now, right?
I am.
And so your argument has become the constitutional right to a preliminary hearing is similar to the constitutional right to trial, and therefore an enhancer is an element for trial purposes and also for preliminary hearing purposes. Is that your argument?
Yes, and I don't think that that's separate from an argument that I laid out in my briefs either. It may not have been said as specifically, but I'd like to point that out today.
Okay, well, I'd like to understand the constitutional basis of your argument in terms of the right to a preliminary hearing.
Thank you. The courts, especially with respect to the purpose of a preliminary hearing, I would cite to People v. Mestis in this court, which specifically stated, the preliminary hearing is not a judicial rubber stamp for prosecutorial discretion. The full potential and purpose of the preliminary hearing is only realized when it is utilized as a check on the power of the prosecution. The United States Supreme Court in Epstein the suspect's need for a neutral determination of probable cause increases significantly. The consequences of prolonged detention may be more serious than the inference occasioned by arrest. Pretrial confinement may imperil the suspect's job, interrupt his source of income, and impair his family relationships. Essentially, in Gerstein, the Supreme Court of the United States found a Fourth Amendment right to a preliminary hearing.
I don't think anybody, you know, is concerned about how important preliminary hearings are. I mean, everybody agrees with that. The problem is where do preliminary hearings fit into this line that you've already suggested of Apprendi, et cetera, Blakely Ring, and particularly with respect to enhancers. And so I think we tried to grant cert on that very, very specific issue. And if you could help us with that, I'd appreciate it.
I think that the fact that of the liberty interests of a defendant are so extreme, and that the preliminary hearing is there specifically in order to weed out cases that have been charged but yet do not have proof in which to hold that person in custody. In practical instances, a preliminary hearing is so important for determinations of bond setting. In this case, Mr. McKendry was charged with a Class 2 felony. At the preliminary hearing, there was not probable cause found as to Class 2 felony. The county court at that time bounded over as to the Class 4 felony. There's a significant difference in the setting of a bond on a Class 2 felony than there is on a Class 4 felony. If there were no need to prove up each and every element, and indeed that element which causes this to be a Class 2 felony as opposed to a Class 4 felony, we have more people sitting in custody pre-trial. Especially in my practice as a public defender, all of my clients are poor. The difference in setting between a Class 4 felony bond and a Class 2 felony bond may mean the difference between them losing their job, losing their home, losing connections with their family. I believe it rises to a constitutional level of due process, and in addition to effective assistance of counsel. The preliminary hearing also dovetails into case management purposes. Class 2 felonies are charged. However, there is no probable cause for a Class 2 felony. Yet there is a risk that your client will go before a jury with the accusation of a Class 2 felony.
Do you think, though, that as far as the Constitution is concerned, that that probable cause requirement would be satisfied simply by something like an arrest warrant, if there were one in this case, or a Riverside affidavit by a police officer?
The difference to me in this situation is that the state of Colorado requires preliminary hearings. I don't believe that there can be a distinction made between, if you want to say, identification as an element, or whether the victim is at risk as an element. It seems arbitrary to pick and choose which elements would be proven by preliminary hearing versus
after. I guess I thought your tie-in, though, with Apprendi was that somehow that body of constitutional law carried over to our preliminary hearing because the preliminary hearing was constitutionally required. But I guess that's what I'm asking. Is there any such requirement? I mean, I sort of want to follow up on Justice Martinez's question, I guess. Where's the tie-in with a constitutional requirement for a preliminary hearing?
Well, this court has found in People v. Lucero, citing Gerstein from the United States Supreme Court, that there is a constitutional basis for a probable cause to...
Truly, though, do you think that case stands for the proposition that the U.S. Constitution requires us to allow preliminary hearings?
That's an interesting question. What I would say is what this state has chosen to do to come into compliance with the probable cause requirement.
But we also, though, I mean, we couldn't, the preliminary hearing wouldn't satisfy the requirements of Gerstein v. Pugh, would it, or at least as interpreted in Riverside. You'd have to have a probable cause determination by a judicial officer within hours, right? What's Riverside? Within 48 hours. But it would be satisfied by something as simple as a judge passing on an affidavit by an officer, something of that nature, right?
I don't disagree with the requirements set forth in Gerstein. However, what I disagree with is that because of the process already afforded in the state of Colorado, it is arbitrary to say that one particular now determined to be element by the rulings in Apprendi, Ring, and Blakely would not be required to go forth through the process already determined to be appropriate in the state of Colorado.
I'm not sure I understand that. I mean, in a vaguely maybe analogous way, there are certain charges for which Colorado does not grant a preliminary hearing, correct? At all?
Are you talking about like people who are out of custody or misdemeanors?
Yeah, not in custody, misdemeanors, what, class five? I don't know about fours who are not in custody. I think you don't get a preliminary hearing for those either, do you?
That's correct. And what's interesting, and I think is also important for this argument, is that the state of Colorado has determined that if you are out of custody, you don't need a preliminary hearing on four, fives, and sixes, unless those charges require mandatory sentencing, or unless those charges are crimes of violence.
Well, and my point to you is, Colorado has already distinguished that sometimes you get a preliminary hearing, sometimes you don't, on various bases, that many of which you have just alluded to, the level of classification, the custody, those are some of the things that involve in various statutes. So are the provisions, that are those, is Colorado law unconstitutional in those instances where a preliminary hearing is not allowed?
No, that's not at all what I'm arguing. What I'm arguing is when it is allowed, process requires that the determination of probable cause be made as to each element.
Let me ask you this then. That seems to presuppose that a sentence enhancer is an element. I mean, if the legislature, instead of calling it a sentence enhancer, had specifically said you're entitled to a preliminary hearing as to these four pieces, but not as to the piece that we are referring to as a sentence enhancer, if they had legislated in that manner, you don't get a preliminary hearing on class fours if you're not in custody, and you don't get a preliminary hearing on at risk. Would that be all right, or is that also violative in some way?
I believe that specifically would be violative, and again, you have to go back to the purpose of the preliminary hearing, which there's a liberty interest, that a preliminary hearing often results in the setting of a bond in a case. The state of Colorado has deemed that everybody in custody gets a preliminary hearing if it's a felony matter. That argument, the basis of which is these allegations are holding you in jail.
But does that elevate it to a constitutional right?
The specific fact that they're in custody?
The statutory provision allowing for a preliminary hearing.
No, I don't think the statutory provision does. I think that the statutory provision is Colorado's way of effectuating the constitutional right. I think that because the constitutional right is based at its foundation in liberty, Colorado has limited those in custody. There is also some wording in Gersting about the fact of being on bond is also at itself arguably a restraint on your liberty. Colorado has determined only if you're on bond for a 1, 2, or 3 or mandatory sentence case or crime of violence case, do you get that probable cause determination. But I think that the rules as set forth in the state of Colorado are their interpretation of the extent that the liberty interest of the defendant is at risk with these allegations hanging over his or her head.
Is there any other basis in the statute or rule besides the word element on which you could base your case that there should be proof on the at-risk?
Again, and I think my argument is essentially it doesn't matter if you call it a sentence enhancer. It effectuates an additional hold on the defendant. So it goes from a class 4 felony in this case to a class 2 felony. So I believe that Apprendi, Ring, et cetera, require that be called an element.
Okay, I've heard that argument, but is there anything in the language or intent or what we could do to construe the statute or rule on preliminary hearing, which would logically mean that if you have to show up facts to a jury to get the aggravating sentence, you ought to have some proof of that at the preliminary hearing? Or are you solely turning on the word element? What else is there any logical construction of the preliminary hearing language in the statute or rule that would satisfy your position?
The preliminary hearing case law, People v. Fisher, that I will cite, specifically says each and every element. Now, that uses the word element, which you're taking issue with. However, what they are saying is whatever is holding this person in custody, you have to show your evidence for it. So whether you want to call it an element, whether you want to call it a sentence enhancer, the fact that this woman is alleged to have been at risk holds Mr. McKendry in this case on a higher level of bond for a longer period of time while he awaits resolution of these allegations. I think that Apprendi, et cetera, eliminate the distinction between sentence enhancers and elements. However, I don't think that Mr. McKendry's pleading before the court requires this court, should you reverse the Court of Appeals, to completely eliminate prior case law distinguishing sentence enhancers and elements, because a lot of that prior case law has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. There's double jeopardy issues that have been determined. Most of the case law cited in the Court of Appeals regarding what is a sentence enhancer, what is an element, has nothing to do with Mr. McKendry's plea before the court. And if there are no further questions, I would reserve my remaining 20 seconds for rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Jacob Edson. I'm a deputy district attorney in Arapahoe County for the 18th Judicial District. I'm the original prosecutor in this case. I'd like to first address Justice Hobbs, your first question, which is a sentence enhancer element, essentially? And that's kind of where we come down to here. And this has been addressed by this very court in 2004 in the McKinney case, which was authored by Your Honor, Justice Hobbs. And a sentence enhancer is not an element for purposes of preliminary hearing. And that's the crux of the argument here and the crux of this case. In this particular case, as the court knows, through the pleadings, through the briefs, Mr. McKendry was charged with numerous counts. But what we're talking about here is he was charged specifically with sexual assault, one of the victims being an at-risk individual. That at-risk designation, as this very court talked about in the McKinney case, is a sentence enhancement. It's not an element of the sexual assault offense itself, and that's the key distinction and the key difference. If it were an element of the offense, if it were part of the offense, and the word offense itself is found within the preliminary hearing statute, and that's a key aspect of it as well. Preliminary hearing is for the offense itself, and the offense is the sexual assault count, and that's what the preliminary hearing is to be heard upon. But the making it from a class 4 felony to a class 2 felony is enhancing the penalty, enhancing the sentence. And
But let me ask you about that distinction. It would enhance the sentence, but you'd also have to prove up the fact that this person was at risk.
At trial, yes.
And the question is, you say somewhat summarily, at trial, and of course that is exactly the issue. Why not, since it is a factual aspect of this particular charge, why not at preliminary hearing? It's completely different in my mind than, say, the fact that the defendant had a prior record, which, is almost just a paper matter of proof. This is factual. There could be a contest as to whether this person is at risk or not.
I understand your question, Justice Rice. And I again go back to McKinney, but I'll answer it in this fashion. The offense itself and the elements needed for proof of preliminary hearing, and I don't need to go through the standards of preliminary hearing, we all know that, but the elements itself revolve around the sexual assault charge, not the at-risk portion. Just like in the McKinney case, the offense itself was theft, but the sentence-enhancing aspect of it is that the victim was at risk. It is true at trial that if the jury finds that the victim was an at-risk individual pursuant to statute, whether it be by age or by the developmental disability it's talked about, that in particular to a sexual assault charge, and this as it's found in this case, raises it from a class 4 to a class 2 felony. But the key distinction.
I understand. Let me just ask you this. What's the difference between a sex assault on a child? You'd have to prove that the victim was a child, right?
Right.
And the legislature somehow decided to treat that as a crime, with the child being an element, versus a sex assault on an at-risk person, the at-risk person being an enhancer as opposed to an element. I mean, aren't those logically the same thing? They're just kind of defined differently?
Somewhat, particularly for the at-risk statutory section that I talk about in my brief. It refers back to the sex assault count itself. It's not entirely separate, and it's not entirely a new elemental aspect of it, but it incorporates the actual charge itself, which is sexual assault. I believe what you're talking about, Justice Rice, is something that would include an actual element of the offense itself. Which
sex assault on a child includes the child as an element.
Right.
Sex assault on an at-risk adult
treats the at-risk adult as an enhancer, not an element.
Right.
Isn't that logically just inconsistent? At least it's different the way those statutes are written. And if, in fact, it's the same thing factually, shouldn't we treat it in the same way for purposes of preliminary hearings?
Respectfully, I don't believe so, and this is why. If you take the sex assault on an at-risk individual, a jury could come back and find any offender guilty of sexual assault, just guilty of sexual assault regardless of the victim themselves. They could then find that the victim was, in fact, an at-risk individual or not an at-risk individual. And that's the key distinction, then, if you were to have sexual assault on a child, where one of the elements is that the victim has to be a child. Here, the jury could theoretically still find that sexual assault had occurred, but found that the actual victim...
But that's sort of incidental, isn't it? I mean, we also have charges that are that way. You can define a charge as having five elements, and then have another charge that has four of those, a lesser included, basically. And you have kind of the same situation. The jury could maybe find the lack of one element, but the others. But in that case, the legislature has done it with elements. So whether they do it with elements or whether they do it with enhancers, it functions the same way as far as the argument you're making, as far as the fact that a jury could convict of part but not the other part, and what ultimately the conviction is for could change depending on the jury's outcome.
Right. I guess my...
So I'm having trouble understanding why the argument that you're making right now about what happens at trial has really anything to do with the question before us, actually.
Okay. Well, my point is going back again to the fact of whether this is a sentence enhancer or an element of the crime. And my argument clearly is that it is a sentence enhancer.
Well, it clearly is a sentence enhancer. The question is so what? I mean, doesn't it function the same as an element?
Two things. Number one, it's a very big question as to so what, because if it is a sentence enhancer based upon the progeny that this court has laid out, and I cited in the brief, including, I believe, the Mestis case, sentence enhancers are not subject to preliminary hearing determination, and that's the exact reason why we're here. So I think that is a very important question that needs to be determined first, and I think that it already has been determined by this court.
Your argument is much broader, isn't it? Isn't your argument is, it's not, you know, you're preliminary on a sentence enhancer, regardless of the fact that for some purposes it's the functional equivalent of an element, because the legislature has said so. And absent some constitutional compulsion to treat it differently, it's up to them to call it an enhancer or not an enhancer, or they could simply call it elements you don't get a preliminary hearing on.
And respectfully, I submit that it is, it's really not an element, because the jury, again, can convict, and the charge itself is just sexual assault. It's not the at-risk portion of it. It has nothing to do with that.
Oh, but that's all just definitional. I mean, let me ask you this question. If the legislature did what I just indicated, which is to say, you know, elements of charges, and as to the fifth element, you don't get a preliminary hearing, as to the other four, you do. Is there any problem with that?
Just, can you say that one more time?
Had the legislature decided that at-risk is an element and defined it as an element, but said you don't get a preliminary hearing as to that element, you do as to the other elements, which constitute a lesser charge, is there a problem with that? Can the legislature do that?
Well, I think that's in opposed to what the actual preliminary hearing statute is right now, but assuming that they somehow change it and make it as you're theorizing, I think that it would go to the direct issue as to the elements required for probable cause as to the offense that is before the court. It's a very different question that we're wrestling here, because again, the elements of the actual crime.
Wait a minute, I want to make sure. So you're suggesting that if the legislature had said there are five elements, you only get a preliminary hearing on four of them, that might be inappropriate because there's some right to a preliminary hearing on the fifth element?
I don't know, Judge, or Justice. I think that...
Well, isn't that the crux of the matter here? Because regardless of whether they call it a sentence enhancer or they call it an element or they call it a non-preliminary hearing factor, regardless of the terminology, isn't the whole question here whether there's some right to a preliminary hearing on something the legislature has said there is not?
Yes. I think that it's been phrased both ways by Justice Rice and Your Honor, Justice Martinez, that making the crime and putting in there, say, the fifth element, making the at-risk element, that creates its own entirely separate crime as opposed to what we're dealing with right here, which is the element in the offense itself, which is specifically talked about within preliminary hearing, and the requirements under preliminary hearing are to be met as to the offense itself and not the enhancement part. I mean, that's as the statute is put together at this point.
And I think you almost proved your case by misspeaking, because you said when you talked about the at-risk element, it was its own separate crime. And I guess that's the essence of this. It's not really an enhancer, isn't it? It's a whole brand new crime.
No, I was saying that in the theory of Justice Martinez was talking about, if we were to create a crime of sexual assault on an at-risk as a crime itself and not the sexual
assault. Which would be the same as sexual assault on a child.
Yes.
Which is its own crime.
Right, but sexual assault on an at-risk is sexual assault first and foremost, with the enhancement if the jury so finds.
What statutory language are you writing on to indicate that one only gets a preliminary hearing with regard to the elements of an offense, called elements?
I'm not sure the word elements per se is in the preliminary hearing statute. I looked at it very carefully, and there's, I believe, three different sections within two within statutory law and one within the criminal procedure rules, but it talks about the offense itself. It doesn't talk about elements, and clearly my argument is that the at-risk determination is an enhancement. It's not part of the offense itself. The offense is, in this case, sexual assault.
So it's basically the distinction between elements and sentence enhancement factors for purposes of a preliminary hearing, merely the creation of this court in the way we've articulated these standards in the past?
I'd agree with that.
And we could change that if we want, I take it.
Yes. Going back again to the McKinney case, I think it's been, which of all the cases that are cited in the brief is the most closest to this particular issue.
And I guess where I was going with that is kind of back to where Justice Rice started and maybe where Justice Martinez was going. So from a policy point of view or from a law point of view, rather than purely a categorization based on names, why should we treat these as different? Simply because the legislature in one case treated matters as lesser and greater offenses, and in another treated it as an offense with a sentence enhancement factor. For purposes of the reasons behind a preliminary hearing, why should these two situations be treated differently?
Part of this, and the court, this very court talks about this in McKinney, goes back to the legislative declaration of at risk, going back to the very nature of at risk and talking about that. The legislature has set that aside and given a special protection for those who are at-risk individuals. And I think that the key distinction there is that the legislature has specifically looked at that and not created its own separate crime of sexual assault of an at-risk individual with all the elements contained within one statutory section. Instead, they've given the statutory language of sexual assault with that enhancement going along with the legislative declaration as to why.
I understand that to mean you think we should decide that because of their choice to organize it that way, they intended that you not be entitled to a preliminary hearing determination of the at-risk elements?
I do.
Okay. Well, that's only because you assume that that is the definition of offense, right, of an offense.
That's true.
Where do we find the definition of offense in the statute?
Didn't look that carefully at it, Judge, Justice. I can tell you that again, using the term elements, using the term offense, specifically within the preliminary hearing statute, it is offense. What defines an offense, I would submit to the court, is exactly what the offense is within the statutory section. In this case, sexual assault is the offense.
I understand, but McKinney wasn't a preliminary hearing case, was it?
It is not. It was the determination as to whether at risk or theft, which is in subsection 5 of the same subsection of at risk, or same statutory section of at risk, whether in fact that is a sentence enhancement, which goes back to the very beginning of the argument that it is in fact sentence enhancement.
So these policy arguments regarding the purpose of a preliminary hearing are at play in this case. We haven't decided it before, right?
I'd agree with that.
Counsel, in this case, the prosecution actually sought to amend the complaint or the information after the preliminary hearing, and that's the posture in which this has come up. Under your theory, under your argument, would it be possible then for the prosecution to bring charges, say, sex assault on a child as a regular, say, F4, but then after a preliminary hearing, simply amend the information or the complaint to add in additional sentence enhancers that would elevate it to a class 3 use of a weapon or threat or anything like that?
I would disagree with that in that, again, the offense itself that you're talking about, Justice, is that sexual assault on the child itself is its own statutory section, as is just, I'll call it regular sexual assault. But there is no sexual assault at risk as its own statutory section. It is sexual assault, and then it's referred to in the at-risk portion. So to do what you're suggesting is to essentially put forth a sexual assault determination, request that I have some more time to finish the question.
Sure.
Sorry. The sexual assault on a child, in that particular circumstance, that offense itself under that particular statutory section indicates that the child needs to be of a certain age. And it's very different that we're talking about here on sexual assault with at-risk because...
Right, and I guess what I'm talking about is assuming that was proven up, or probable cause was established at a preliminary hearing for that sex assault on a child basic offense, there are sentence enhancers that can be tacked onto that would elevate that crime to an F3. And my concern is, what happens then is, under your theory, could not the prosecution simply amend the information after the preliminary hearing to tack those on and then subject the defendant to trial to a higher class felony post-preliminary hearing because it's a sentence enhancer?
Yes. If it's
that's your argument.
Yeah,
okay.
If it's not preliminary hearing eligible, certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Edson.
Thank you.
Rebuttal, Ms. Menzel. We'll give you a few extra seconds because we gave it to Mr. Edson.
I want to weigh in just very briefly on the discussion about the definition of offense charged. It says offense charged in the felony complaint. In this case, specifically, the prosecution chose to charge with specificity. At risk sex assault, overcome victim's will, F2. They cited both the statutory site for at risk at 18.6.5.103.7a and also 18.3.402.1a. So there is specificity in the charging document that the offense charged with specificity in this case is that of an at risk sex assault overcoming the victim's will. So I believe that fits in the definition which is required by the legislature of proving probable cause for the offense charged in the complaint. I would ask that the court rule the court.
Thank you. Thank both attorneys for your arguments. The case will be submitted on the briefs.